What's going on, everybody? Welcome into another edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day. It's Lou DiBiase in studio. Today is Tuesday, July 3rd. Happy to be back with you. It's been quite some time since I've been on the show, since last Thursday, but if you've missed any of our shows, you can always check them out. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, and of course, LockedOnEagles.com as always. Yesterday, we kicked off our first edition of Locked in the Film Room with Johnny Page. He's a writer for Bleeding Green Nation, and he's going to be doing a show for us once a week. He dove in the film room about Corey Clement, the second-year running back. Could he be a breakout candidate this year? What happens if Jay Ajayi goes down? Is Clement a type of runner that could take over 15 to 20 touches, carries a game? Is he maybe the future star running back for the Eagles? You know, Jay Ajayi is a free agent. So Johnny Page, our brand new host of the Locked in the Film Room podcast, that is up on our feed. He recorded yesterday, and he'll be doing it once a week. So very happy to get Johnny on the network, and it's very exciting. So his first pod was really good. Please go check that out. Leave him some feedback. You can always rate us, hopefully 5 stars, on Apple Podcasts, and always leave reviews. We really appreciate all the feedback we've gotten over the show. For the first month, we are officially in the second month of the new era of the Locked On Eagles podcast. And to kick off July, to my right is Mr. Lars Lewis joining us once again, round two. Lars, how you doing? Welcome back. Thanks for joining us on the show again.
You know, to quote Paul Stanley from one of the songs in Kiss, it is hot, hot, hotter than hell.
Yeah, so
in this studio.
So we are far from the nest. Lars and I are both stationed up in Buffalo, New York, working in sports media. He works for, he does Niagara hockey play-by-play, works here on 91.3 FM WBNY.
I do a bunch of things.
He's an NFL analyst. You're just a freelancer, man. Whatever you need for people to do, you know all sports, and you're a Birds fan, so of course you fit right here on the Locked On Eagles podcast. And although we're far from the nest, we bleed green just like everyone else. Do we bleed midnight green or Kelly green? I'm not sure.
You and I might differ on that.
I feel like one arm I'll bleed midnight green and the other I'll bleed Kelly, right? I like both. I don't want to get rid of both.
So okay, I understand that for you, because seeing them on a Monday night, if they're wearing like the all black with the midnight green,
right,
it looks menacing.
And they
won
a Super Bowl in it, so it's very hard to just want that to go away.
That's
what I've grown up with. It's kind of like, I don't know, the Mighty Ducks, right? You know, the eggplant and the green.
Then suddenly,
it's orange and black.
Orange is the new black.
Yeah, apparently. But
that's a bad joke.
That was a bad joke, Lars. You can give me your microphone. Thanks for coming on the show.
You can bite me, DiBiase.
So what we're going to be talking about today, it is a dead period. Eagles training camp kicks off July 25th, so we got a couple weeks still before Eagles activities. But there are some key notable news that happened throughout the week, and then later on, we're going to get after NFL.com, as they have been trying to stir up some things with Eagles fans, as they kept Carson Wentz out of their top 5 quarterback list, top 10 actually, and Doug Peterson was out of their top 5 head coaching, but we'll save that for segment 2. We got to get through some news first, and the first story is kind of a fun one, Lars, but wait, before we even do this, Carson Wentz threw a 70-yard pass like it was nothing today.
Bombs.
Did you see the tweet? The video of Carson Wentz just absolutely ripping it. And he had no brace on. And I'm telling you, Lars, he's playing week one. He looks so good. And I know we're all caught up still in the Super Bowl hype. Yesterday was the Super Bowl replay on NFL Network.
Oh, you don't say.
I watched that from front to back. And, oh, by the way, because of that, shameless plug, with that being said, I'm writing up a story right now on LockedOnEagles.com. Most underrated plays of Super Bowl 52. I got some good ones in there, so check that out. That's also going to be on the website tonight. But because everyone's still caught up in the Super Bowl hype, I think people, you know, everyone's still all about Nick Foles. And I think we forget just how good Carson Wentz was in those 13 games.
As I think the writers did, too. And we'll
right.
get to that article
we'll get to
in a
that
minute.
As well. Thank you for that shameless plug.
It's not shameless.
It's not a shameless plug. It's a sneak peek. It's a
yeah.
little tease. It's a tease.
Come on, man. That's what everyone else does.
That's true. But that's why it's shameless. We have no shame.
So tell me about that.
In the Eagles news around the nest, Doug Peterson beat Sean Payton, Saints head coach, in 2 golf bets this week. So the Eagles, they made it a little interesting.
Sean Payton's still taking L's in the playoffs.
There's only so much, and I can't really come back at him because Sean Payton handed the Eagles their most recent playoff loss back in 2013. So I'm not going to... You can come after him like that.
I'm going to give you the Sean Payton face. Just the endless juicy fruit.
Yeah,
just.
I'm still not over... I mean, I'm a little bit over it now because the Eagles just won the Super Bowl, but 2013 still stings a little bit. All the big Eagles losses always still sting. But the Eagles, Doug Peterson and Sean Payton, they do play this year at New Orleans in the Superdome. And they do what they can control. So they were trying to make it a little interesting. They were both golfing. They're both competitive. Doug Peterson used to play quarterback in the NFL, so you know he's got a big-time competitive edge. And what they put it, what this bet was, Doug Peterson wins, the Eagles get to wear green at the Superdome. So they get to wear their home jerseys. And I believe, Lars, when do they play the Saints? I think it's later on in the year.
It'll be November 18th.
Yeah, so it's like halfway through. So
I'm kind of ashamed that's a 1 o'clock game.
That should not be a 1 o'clock game, right? That could easily be the NFC Championship game. Is it shocking, though, that the NFL did that? It's probably like Bengals-Packers is the Sunday night football
game. And somehow the Eagles-Giants are at 8:30.
Mm-hmm. And then the Monday night football game will be Titans-49ers. I feel like that's how the NFL goes. But the Eagles, Doug Peterson ended up prevailing in these two bets. The Eagles get to wear green at the Superdome. Are you a fan of wearing colored jerseys on the road?
Absolutely I am.
Okay.
Absolutely. And here's the reason why. I'm actually going to borrow from another sport for this perspective. Say, for example, I know a lot of people in Philadelphia. You guys are got to be Flyers fans along with being an Eagles fan. Now, any one of the older fans, back in the day, the home team used to wear white jerseys and all the road teams would wear the dark jerseys. Mm-hmm. I just like seeing different colors. Like, if I'm a fan in a town, I want to see different colored uniforms. I don't want to see a white uniform throughout all 8 games of the season, because then I don't see any variety. Like, imagine being in Philadelphia, you get to see, you know, like, the blue for the Giants, or the, well, actually, Dallas always wears white,
Dallas
so no matter what.
Yeah.
But you see Washington with the wine colored, or you see, you know, even like an exotic team. Say the Dolphins come into Philadelphia, you get to see them wear the aqua uniform.
That's true, but
it's something that's aesthetically different compared to just seeing the white jerseys for all 8 games of the year.
That's a good point. I mean, but for me, I guess that's right. But to play devil's advocate, I am the, you know, it's the home stadium, so I'm an Eagles fan at the Link. I do probably want to see my team in the colored jerseys. I mean, I don't want to see them always in white. I do get your point, though. It is cool to see some of the different jerseys, and you'll always be seeing midnight green versus white. So there is that kind of back and forth. But nonetheless, you're going to get your wish. The Eagles get to wear green at the Superdome this year against the Saints, which is pretty cool.
Little off base here. I prefer the New Orleans Saints wearing white.
You don't like their black jerseys?
It's the Saints.
Yeah.
The Saints should be wearing white, at least all the time, because it represents, you know, the Angels, and it represents, you know...
Their vintage white are even better.
Yes, the ones with the gold stripes and the black. I have that jersey, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Forgive me, Eagles fans. I could not resist. I needed that jersey from the Color Rush night. It was too nice. But that you're right, though. To see, like, the dark-colored uniforms at home, that is true. Because it's almost like you're Superman.
Right.
And you're seeing the other team just wearing white, and you see them all the other weeks of the year.
Yeah, so that was a cool story. Some other news, not so good. Linebacker Nigel Bradham, a key contributor in the Super Bowl, when Jim Schwartz says basically Nigel Bradham was the backbone of that defense last year, he will be suspended for the first game, that first Thursday night season opener against the Atlanta Falcons. Because of that incident with a hotel employee in 2016, which ended up getting Nigel Bradham some charges, so he's going to miss just the first game, but the Eagles are going to be extremely thin at linebacker now. They did cut Michael Kendricks in the offseason. Jordan Hicks is recovering from his leg injuries that kept him out for the second half of the season, so who knows if Jordan Hicks should probably be ready for week one, I would think is safe to say. But nonetheless, the Eagles are pretty thin at linebacker right now.
Preseason's going to be really important.
It is.
We're going to see who's going to start at linebacker week one.
Right. We're going to have to see what Nate Jerry can do. you know, the second-year player out of Nebraska, Kamu Grugier-Hill. We'll see maybe his athleticism, his ability to cover in space. You know, he's been mostly a special teams guy with the Eagles so far, but he had a good OTAs, he had a good mini camp. So we're really, yeah, you're right, preseason, we're really going to have to keen in on some of these linebackers. And, of course, Corey Nelson, who we brought in basically to be Michael Kendricks' replacement from the Denver Broncos. So the Eagles are going to be thin at linebacker for the first game. But, Lars, I'm not really concerned because linebacker is a position that it's not disintegrating because guys like Nigel Bradham are still huge parts of defenses.
You
like
can,
CJ Mosley.
You can kind of mask it.
But you can get by without it, and it's almost, you know, it's an evolving position where a lot of safeties now are kind of playing a linebacker role. Malcolm Jenkins for the Eagles, 46% or in the 40 to 50% of his snaps last year were at dime linebackers.
Yeah.
So the majority of the time Malcolm Jenkins was playing down because now more you'd rather have a safety type hybrid at linebacker that can cover because linebackers have to, you know, tight ends now like Rob Gronkowski are like wide receivers and you got to be able to cover those guys.
So yeah, you don't have the old school thumpers anymore.
Right. So you don't have that anymore, and although Nigel Bradham's a guy, though, that can cover out in space, and if Jordan Hicks is ready, I'm not going to be too concerned with this because I think you have Jordan Hicks down. You can use Corey Nelson and then kind of maybe a rotation of Grugier-Hill or Nate Jerry. Joe Walker as well. Walker was a pretty decent contributor early on.
They may have to slide him to the other side.
Yeah, I point back to the Giants' fourth down and goal where Joe Walker made that huge stop. So Joe Walker is there as well. I'm not overly concerned. It's only one game. And like I said, linebacker, a lot of the time I was watching that Super Bowl yesterday. You know, when the Patriots were using four receiver sets or three in a running in a tight end, and they would throw James White out in space in the slot or Deion Lewis, they would use a lot of those packages. The Eagles only used Nigel Bradham. Michael Kendricks a lot of the time was on the sideline because they would have three corners and then three safeties. You'd have Roddy McLeod as the lone safety in the backfield. Corey Graham would be shadowing Gronk, and then Malcolm Jenkins is covering their running backs and basically just being that Swiss Army knife. So I think they're going to be okay with this. I don't think it's going to be a huge issue, but it is kind of suspect, Lars, considering the incident happened in 2016. So it was the summer right before Doug Peterson's first year that this happened. They just brought him in originally from up here in Buffalo. Nigel Bradham played with Jim Schwartz and the Bills, so they just signed him and he got into trouble. My question is why it took the NFL so long to make a punishment on this. The case was resolved in January, so then you come all the way up to July for basically a two-year-old incident that you now suspend for one game. It's just, it's the whole process of punishments in the NFL. It's just so
confusing.
It's so confusing. It doesn't seem like they have any sort of guidelines, any sort of policy or constructed way of doing things. And it was just kind of head scratching because the solution was resolved. And I understand maybe the NFL does its own investigations, but fine, if you're going to suspend him, but why in his third season since it's happened? It just, the NFL is very confusing when it comes to policies on punishment.
Well, you said the case was resolved this January, right?
Yeah, I think officially, but
I think they had to wait until then, and they weren't going to suspend Bradham for the playoffs.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's,
so maybe that's what they had in their mind. Instead of suspending him for a playoff game, they decided they're going to suspend him the first week of next year. And I think if that was their mindset when it came to this, I think that's the right decision.
Mm-hmm.
Because taking a guy out of a playoff game would have definitely raised a lot of arms in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I agree. So, I mean, it sucks. It's not, I mean, Nigel Bradham's a huge part of this defense.
And they're also playing Atlanta week one, so you kind of need him.
But I'm not, because they're playing Atlanta, I'm not overly concerned because Atlanta is not a team that goes power eye a lot of the time. They're not going to run a lot of two tight end sets. They're going to have Tevin Coleman and Devonta Freeman rolling out. You know, they use most of the time, they're out in three receiver sets, almost the entirety. And considering they drafted Calvin Ridley in the first round this year, they're going to be running Julio Jones, Calvin Ridley, Mohamed Sanu basically the entire way. You know, Sanu's going to play in that slot role and Ridley's going to play on the outside. And again, Tevin Coleman and Devonta Freeman are really good receiving running backs. So
they come at you at a lot of different angles, Atlanta.
So maybe even if Bradham played, only Bradham and Hicks were going to play at linebacker. I wouldn't expect, probably maybe they were going to use their base defense 15 to 25% of the time in that first game. So it sucks, it does, but getting Nyjer Bradham back for week two, I think that's it's a fair punishment. I think it's fine. You know, it's we'll bite the bullet on that one game, and then we get him for the rest of the way. So,
I would not say
terrible news.
Yeah, even if he is suspended for that first game of the season, and yes, the timing when you're playing Atlanta, which is let's make this clear, Atlanta's still a tough team to go up against because they have so many different options on the offense that can certainly give you a lot of fits on defense, but Philadelphia still has that front four, and I think that's insanely crucial when you're playing against a pocket passer like Matt Ryan. You get in his face. I think they'll be just fine.
I agree. Let's get to one more news excerpt before we get into our second segment about NFL.com, basically trolling Eagles Twitter, and because they're bored and there's not a lot of news going on right now, and that's why I feel like they were doing it, but we'll get into it. Jameis Winston was suspended for 3 games, the starting quarterback of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, after allegedly sexually harassing an Uber driver. And why this ties in with the Eagles is because Eagles cornerback Ronald Darby, who went to Florida State with Jameis Winston, was with Winston throughout the night of the incident, and it's just not a great look for Darby at all. Darby's not going to be suspended, and I wrote a piece up on LockedOnEagles.com. If you want to go check it out, I detailed the entire situation and what it means for Ronald Darby. It's not a great look for him. You know, he defended Winston back at Florida State, too, when Winston was accused of sexual assault of a number of different women. So Darby before has gotten Jameis Winston's back, but Lars, it wasn't justified here because Darby's story just, there's a lot of holes to it. Darby said that flat out she was lying, that, you know, he was in the Uber with Winston that night when the incident reportedly happened and that nothing happened. But the twist here is that, yes, Darby, he knows what he was doing. Technically, he wasn't wrong because he said he was in an Uber with Winston that night, but there were two separate Uber drivers that night that drove Jameis Winston. And the second one, Ronald Darby, which apparently is when it happened, Ronald Darby was not on that Uber. Him and Brandon Banks, a friend who's in jail right now for raping a girl, he is in jail right now serving 15 years. He had a different story than Darby. And Banks is a friend of Darby, not Winston. So he has no incentive really to defend Winston at all. He has more incentive to defend Darby, but he came out and said him and Darby were not in that second Uber, that Winston got pretty rambunctious that night at the clubs, and that they put him in an Uber to send him home, and that's when the incident happened.
You'd think he'd have learned his lesson by now.
It's really not a good look for Ronald Darby, and you know, it's not going to affect him probably in the regular season. He's not going to be suspended, but he lied to the NFL. The NFL really didn't even listen to Darby's statement about it because they just didn't believe him. And it's just, this is twice now where Darby has defended Jameis Winston, and I don't think Jameis Winston should be defended anymore. I don't know how long Winston's even in the plans in Tampa Bay anymore.
Which is the weirdest thing because they both play on different teams.
Right.
It'd be one thing if he was teammates with Jameis Winston. He was playing for Tampa, and he wanted to make sure his quarterback wouldn't get in trouble. So at the start of the season, but they play at two different teams. Like, I get it. They both went to Florida State together. But why would Darby risk his own, like, risk his own career or risk his season for a guy who plays for another team in the same conference?
I don't expect the NFL to hand down any sort of punishment to Darby, but it's not a great look. Let me just read you Darby's statement real quick about the incident.
And it's amazing they don't care as much about this as they do deflated footballs, but that's another story.
Quote, there were three of us in the car, not just one of, as been reported. Myself and Jameis were in the back seat. I am confident that nothing inappropriate in nature happened in the car that evening, and Jameis did not have any physical contact with the Uber driver. The accusations are just not true.
You know what that sounds like? That sounds like a PR statement to me.
He didn't even come out and just say, though, that he thinks he didn't do it. He flat out said they're just not true. That's a pretty strong statement for a guy, considering now it looks like he lied. I'm not going to, you know, make a definitive statement on this, but it's just, regardless, even if Darby's telling the truth, Winston got suspended, and Darby said he didn't do it. So regardless of what actually happened, it's still not a good look for Darby. So
yes,
there's been some little negative news for the Eagles this week with Darby and Nyjer Bradham, but nonetheless, we move on. But first, if your company is trying to reach men at the ages of 18 to 44, your company should be sponsoring the Locked On Eagles podcast. Locked On Eagles is listened to by 98% men and 80% between the ages of 18 to 44. So if you're trying to reach men at the ages of 18 to 44, this is your spot. Plus, our rates are extremely reasonable. You can email us at lockedoneaglespodcast@gmail.com to find out more, as Lars mimics my voice throughout the read-on. Thank you very much, sir, you child.
I'm the child.
No, I can't even make that statement. But
this is coming from a guy who bought a whole box of Pop-Tarts just to eat for the next few days.
Pop-Tarts are a main part of my diet, sir.
Yeah, and I don't know how still you look like
listener.
That.
And thank you.
I don't understand this. Your diet is awful.
I bet you the majority of my listeners are Pop-Tart advocates as well.
Oh.
You're probably in the minority here, sir.
Yeah, I know I'm in the minority here, but I'm trying to make sure that I don't gain any more weight than I should have.
You don't want to look like Timmy Jernigan?
Oh, that's not nice.
Or Haloti Ngata?
That's not nice.
Gotta
either.
Make it an Eagles comparison.
You know, here's the weirdest part. They both can run faster than I can, and they're another 185 pounds heavier than me.
I don't know. I think you could beat Haloti Ngata in a race.
On
the offensive
sure.
line, maybe not so much. The Eagles have some athletes up front. Jason Peters would beat you in a race. I think Lane Johnson absolutely would, too. Lane Johnson ran like a 4.5.
You think I want to get in front of that freight train?
Maybe
not a chance.
He didn't run a 4.5, but Lane Johnson, look up Lane Johnson's 40 time.
I know what Lane Johnson's 40 time is. I know what he's about. There's a reason why this team has won so many games when he's in the lineup.
Lane Johnson ran a 4.7, man.
This is a man that's nearly 300 pounds. That's a freak of nature.
Absolutely. Speaking of freaks of nature,
Carson
Wentz was in the news this week as NFL.com analyst, David Carr, former Houston Texans first overall
pick. The lamb to the slaughter.
Brother of Oakland Raiders starter Derek Carr.
Do you feel
bad
for him?
I need to mention that first right now. I do. But not today, not for this podcast, because he put out his top 10 quarterback list, and it did not include Mr. 33 touchdowns in 13 games himself, Mr. Number 3 overall in the NFL Top 100, Carson Wentz.
Mr. Scoring a touchdown with a torn ACL.
Carson Wentz. NFL.com, to me, wise, I think they're out of control, and I think they're just, I think they're bored, because you know, like I said, this is the dead period, and NFL Network has to have consistent coverage of things going on, so they're grasping at straws, and what do? They poke the bear, the massive bear, that is Eagles/Philly Sports Twitter.
So, okay,
you don't come after Philly Sports. Of all fan bases to go after on Twitter, Philadelphia has got to be the toughest.
Oh, that's...
You don't want to mess. I mean, Boston's probably the most annoying, or Minnesota.
That's basically like sticking a red cape in front of a bull.
But it's just, it's such a bad call. But it's good for them because it's good for ratings and they got Eagles fans going. I saw a bunch of different Eagles outlets writing about this today, so I thought it'd be interesting to talk about because, you know, there isn't a lot to talk about. But NFL Network, David Carr kept him out. And it's interesting, Lars, because he put Derek Carr in there, considering Derek Carr had a pretty bad 2017 season. He put his own brother in there, which is probably pretty predictable, and he pointed to Doug Peterson, who makes Wentz almost like a system passer, basically, as to why Carson Wentz isn't in this list. He also pointed to health, but again, go back on Twitter right now and watch Carson Wentz launch that 70-yard bomb today and tell me you don't think that guy is starting week one.
I thought
health
would,
is not even an excuse.
You know, I figured
this.
We would base this off of last season, which I feel like should be a lot more accurate. Don't base a guy off of what's going to happen at the start of next year. Of course that Carson Wentz was hurt. He's had to do rehab, and he looks good in his He looks good in his rehab. We should look at last year's numbers and see the top 10 and the top 5. Carson Wentz has every right to be in the top 5, or hell, even higher.
He should be
number 2, maybe.
I would put him top 4.
Yeah.
Because I respect Breeze, Rodgers, and Brady too much to definitively. Thank you. To assert him ahead of those three with, like, confidence, I'm not going to do that because they're so good, and Aaron Rodgers is going to be back healthy this year. I don't want to put Carson Wentz over that because I think what we saw last year for Carson Wentz is what you're going to see for the future. I don't think it's a Dak Prescott thing where after a huge year, he tailors off. But, again, though, it is only year 3 for Carson Wentz, so that's why, for me, I'm not going to put him number 1 or 2.
You know why? Because
he's certainly in the top 5, Lars, because after that, who are we getting to? Russell Wilson?
That's true.
After that, what? Like, we're getting in the Big Ben, Cam Newton range, and I'm sorry, but what Carson did last year is too much to keep him out of the top five heading into the very next season.
Yeah, if you go based off numbers and you go based off leadership and the success of the team last season when he played and the control the offense had, of course he should be in the top five, and I'd say number four would be a very accurate number because, as you said, you look at Brady, you look at Rodgers, and you look at Breeze. Mm-hmm. These are three guys that have been there, they've done that, they've been doing it for over 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
You can trust that. And considering their play is still at a high level, that's why they own these three spots. Carson Wentz is the guy that's basically knocking on the door. He's the Heisenberg of the NFL.
That's
he is
right.
Like, I am the one who knocks.
I like that. I hate the take, too, about him being close to a... He didn't call him a system quarterback, but he pointed to Nick Foles' success in the playoffs as well. And I understand, yes, Carson Wentz is in a awesome offense that maxes out a quarterback's strengths, and that's great to be in. But you saw, even in his rookie year, Carson Wentz make things happen with pretty much nothing to work with when you talk about receivers. He was going up, you know...
This was before Aguilar started catching everything.
It was the worst receiver you've ever seen in Nelson Aguilar. Doriel Green Beckham, who's out of the league now, and Jordan Matthews in the slot, a very restricted slot player. And yeah, he only had 16 touchdowns, but you saw things he's able to do with little to no talent in the passing game. And I don't like it either because, Lars, Carson Wentz's main strength to me, although there's so many of them, one of them is improvising. Is
keeping his eyes down the field.
The structure of the play breaks down, and he's got to roll to his right. He's getting blitzed. He's got to make five different moves up the pocket, either choose to run or launch it downfield. Just look at the first touchdown of the season in Washington to Nelson Aguilar, making like six different offensive or defensive linemen and pass rushers and linebackers miss to get that ball to Aguilar. You see him succeed outside of Doug Peterson's set offense. So both excuses to me are just not good. And I just think it's a troll job, Lars. It's a very subpar, mediocre troll job from David Carr and NFL.com. It's just really something to stir up conversation, and I guess it worked, but it's just too much for how good Carson Wentz was last year. And just hearing stories like Zach Ertz talking about before the Carolina game on Thursday Night Football, how Wentz saw something in the defense, saw a look in the red zone, that's a big weak spot here, and if we can get them to give us that look, this route right here is going to be open 10 times out of 10. And sure enough, Zach Ertz's touchdown in that game against Carolina was perfect. So you hear stories like that about Carson Wentz, and it's Tom Brady level stuff. It's too much what I saw last year. It was so much growth, so much improvement in so many different areas. He was the most lethal quarterback on third down. It's like, how do you debate that? How do you keep him out? It's really just to stir up conversation, Lars. It's what it's got to be.
Yeah, and I agree with you on that. And I want to bring up Derek Carr also.
Okay.
Because obviously he was mentioned in the list. I'll give Derek Carr this excuse. His receivers were terrible.
Right.
I think the Oakland Raiders that year led the league in drops. Last season.
Offensive line wasn't as good.
Amari Cooper led the league in drops.
I'm with you. It wasn't all on Derek Carr.
And I think that Derek Carr is a very talented quarterback. I think things for Oakland in general just fell apart, and their terrible defense bit them in the butt.
Right.
It was just a whole bunch of bad. Is Derek Carr a top 10 quarterback in this league? I think so.
I would,
with his arm talent.
I would have to really think about it first. I don't want to just off the top of my... I'd
put him at number 10.
Yeah, he's probably in the top 10. But from what his 2017 season was to Carson Wentz, and there's that big of a gap in the rankings...
it's not close.
Come on. It's just... it's ludicrous to me, if you ask me. And let's get to the other controversial thing NFL.com did when it comes to the Eagles. They kept Doug Peterson out of the top five head coaches.
They did this to B.D. Doug.
I understand.
Big D. Doug.
Doug just keeps getting disrespected. I can see it next year at the Super Bowl parade. Jason Kelce up on the podium again. Doug Peterson wasn't a top five head coach. Carson Wentz wasn't in the top 10 quarterbacks. Like, I can see it right now, Lars. It's what's going to happen because... last year it was Michael Lombardi talking about how Doug Peterson's the least qualified head coach there is in football. And then Doug Peterson coaches one of the best games ever in football history in the Super Bowl against probably the greatest mind ever when it comes to football in Bill Belichick. I understand Bill is better. Pete Carroll, I respect them putting him ahead of Doug Peterson. But having Mike McCarthy and Andy Reid ahead is something I don't agree with. I think Mike McCarthy is someone you could argue shouldn't be employed anymore if it wasn't for Aaron Rodgers, right? I mean, outside of that 2010 run, I feel like the Packers have massively underperformed. And a lot of it is the roster has been weak a lot of the time. They've drafted well at times, but their drafting, Ted Thompson's drafting, was on and off. But Mike McCarthy is not a better coach right now than Doug Peterson is. There's no better play caller in football right now than Doug Peterson. And Andy Reid, look, I love Big Red. I respect him. He is one of the best coaches in football right now. But Doug did in 2 years what Reid could never do. Almost in two decades of coaching with the Eagles, Doug Peterson got over the hump.
And I'd say arguably
the hell out of that team in the playoffs. Something Andy Reid, game management-wise, in the clutch, was such a liability at times. And
yep.
It's something Doug learned. And he's not just a complete copy of Andy Reid as a coach. There's
just
similarities.
Look at the Super Bowl, right, for example. On those fourth down plays, Andy Reid may have punted on a couple of those decisions. Doug Peterson knew that you're playing the Patriots. You have to gamble.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what has done Andy Reid in against the Patriots time and time again, is that you can't shy away from New England. You have to attack them. And that's what Doug Peterson did. And you know what? If it would have bit him in the butt, then he would have been criticized for that. But the fact that they made it work,
mm-hmm,
he is being lauded as a top five coach in this league because he knew he needed to take those risks,
right,
in order to beat a team as superhuman as the Patriots are.
I agree. And it's just, we thought Chip Kelly was going to be the innovator in Philadelphia, but it's Doug Peterson. That's the thing, too.
He represents the new era of the NFL.
Right. He stands out over those other guys. Yeah, they're all tenured coaches, and they've all had sustained success. But you got to put Doug Peterson in that list just because of what he represents and what he brings to the table now. He's the hottest new head coach that just is coming off a Super Bowl.
It's kind of weird that a coach just won the Super Bowl and he's not in the top five of a coach's list.
And he was pretty much I think he was the main reason they won, because Nick Foles doesn't play that lights
chances
out without Doug Peterson. Does Andy Reid go for it on that fourth and one in their own territory in the fourth quarter when they're down one? I don't know, Lars. I don't think they end up going for that.
I remember that tweet you're saying you needed to be revived after that
play.
Yeah,
that was yesterday. I got nervous yesterday watching it. Doug is the way football should be right now. With his aggressive... Everyone in the NFL is pretty much coaching not to get fired. Sean McDermott, there's Doug Marrone. There's a lot of conservative coaches out there that just on fourth and one and on the opposing 32, they're going to end up taking that field goal. Not that many people would have drawn up the Philly special on fourth and goal in the Super Bowl against the Patriots.
Andy Reid might have been the only other guy.
It's just Doug is what I want football to be about. Just the aggressive style of play calling. And dude, it's just trusting his players both on and off the field. It's off the field stuff too. He lets them set the culture. It's the players' team. He lets them embrace it. Chip Kelly wanted it always to be about him and his predetermined culture. And it was on and off the field. It was the scheme too. You players are going to mold around my scheme instead of Doug Peterson saying, how can I max out the talent and the strengths on my roster? Because the offense with Nick Foles was very different than the offense with Carson Wentz. And you even heard Nick Foles, who pretty much did a media tour this week talking about the Super Bowl run, said him and Doug and Frank Wright and John DeFilippo looked back at the film after the regular season and said, what are we comfortable with? What can we change? Because not everything that Carson liked, Nick is going to like. And they even went back to what Foles did in 2013. They watched that 27-2 game tape, and they took a lot of that, Lars. It looked like a Chip Kelly-type offense against Atlanta and against Minnesota. It was just Foles was so comfortable, and it was all a product of Doug. And it's just, you got to see that and just know he impacts the team that much, both on and off the field, that their players are so loyal to him. That's what coaching is about, and that's top five, man. Mike McCarthy is not close to Doug Peterson right now. As a head coach, I'm sorry. I respect Mike McCarthy. He's a Super Bowl-winning head coach, but he's not on the level of Doug Peterson right now. The only person that's coaching as good as Doug right now is Bill Belichick.
Was the guy that was across
the
sideline.
That's it. Doug right now to me is two. I just don't know how you have that good of an elite coaching performance in a season in only year two. Whereas he was coaching high school football 10 years ago.
On a team that needed a rebuild.
10 years ago. He was the Eagles. He was a quality coach. He was a specialty coach. I think it was like, you know, Andy Reid was fired in 2013. So 5 years ago, he was just getting his foot in the door when it comes to NFL coaching. Everyone, including me, dude, wanted someone else as the head coach. I'll say it. I was skeptical of Doug Peterson when they first hired him. I wanted a Ben McAdoo type, or a Sean McDermott. I thought, or Adam Gase. Thank God they didn't, because that's literally Chip Kelly 2.0. But he has impressed and he's proved everybody wrong. And this list is, it's flat out disrespectful. Flat out disrespectful. So, shame on you, NFL.com and NFL Network. Eagles fans gotcha. They're all over it on Twitter right now. I'm proud of the Bird Gang because they're on them right now. And maybe that's what NFL Network wants, but we had to discuss it. So that's going to do it for today's edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast. Lars, sir, thank you for joining me again.
Indeed.
Get you on next week, hopefully, right?
Oh, absolutely.
All right.
Wouldn't miss this for the world.
Absolutely. That's going to do it for Lars and I here on the Locked On Eagles podcast, available on the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day. Please subscribe to the podcast. Leave a review. Rate us 5 stars. The feedback is awesome. We love everyone from listening from the United States. We got our guys out in UK and Europe. Football's growing out there, Lars, and we got an audience out there, too, so we appreciate everybody listening.
Shout out to everybody in England for that big win today against Columbia.
Absolutely. Liam Jenkins, my boy, Johnny Page, I'm sure. Jay Ajayi, you guys are all loving it right now. That'll do it for us today. We'll be back next time right here on the Locked On Eagles podcast. Thank you, and let's go, Birds.